Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 18th day of March, Anno Domini 2023, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 9 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. I should point out, for those of you who are not watching us on any of the many video streams that Steve puts out, if you hear somebody scream and disappear from the air, because we have new chairs that... Okay, we'll get used to them at some point, but right now we're falling off them left and right.
They're too high and they're too slippery.
Too high and they're too slippery. So if you hear a... you'll know what happened. On Thursday, the Federal Communications Commission finalized rules requiring mobile carriers to block robotext messages that are likely to be illegal. The FCC described the rules as the agency's first regulation specifically targeting the increasing problem of scam text messages sent to consumers. Carriers will be required to block text messages that come from invalid, unallocated, or unused numbers. Carriers must also block texts from numbers that the subscriber to the number has self-identified as never sending text messages, and numbers that government agencies and other well-known entities identify as not being used for texting. Carriers will have to establish a point of contact for text senders so the senders can inquire about blocked texts. The FCC already requires similar blocking of voice calls from these types of numbers. More robotext rules may be on the way because this action also seeks public comment on further proposals to require providers to block text from entities the FCC has cited as illegal robotexters. For example, the FCC proposes to clarify the Do Not Call Registry protections apply to text messaging. The FCC said it's further proposing to close the lead generator loophole that allows companies to single consumer consent to deliver robocalls and text messages for multiple, perhaps thousands, of marketers on subjects that may not be what the consumer had in mind. The FCC will also take further public comment on text authentication measures and other proposals to continue to fight illegal scam robotexts. Complaints about robotext to the FCC rose from 3,300 to 18,900 per year between 2015 and 2022. Many of these robotexts promote links to phishing websites or websites that can install malware on a consumer's phone. The FCC separately also voted to close another gap in its caller ID authentication rules that target illegal robocalls. The rules already required phone companies to implement the caller ID authentication technologies known as STIR and SHAKEN. But the rules don't apply in every possible scenario, so the FCC has periodically strengthened them. In June 2022, for example, the FCC required carriers with 100,000 or fewer customers to comply a year earlier than these small carriers were originally required to. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the FCC requires scam text blocking. And your choices are about dang time. That'll be nice. Google's doing a pretty good job already. Wait, my phone can get texts? And I don't like any of your choices. So far, we have 21 votes, and about dang time is way ahead, as it should be. And of course you can, give us a call, not a text, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. And if you're on the line, hang on, we'll get to you in just a minute or so. But first let's talk a little bit about this. Now, what you have to understand is that this, is the carriers that are being told to block calls, not the phone makers. So it's not Samsung or Apple or Google or any of them. It's Verizon and T-Mobile and that.
They're in the best position to block the call because they're the one completing the call from the sender to the receiver.
Exactly. Now, as I said in the poll, Google already does an awfully good job at this. I get very, very rarely get a text, a scam text message or a scam email because I use Google mail and phone services. So I rarely get one.
I see the potential spam call ID flag so often.
You're right. Spam likely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I you know, it's like Blake Lively, spam likely. But, yeah, so.
We're in a tough spot as a business because we have to answer calls from unknown callers.
Right, right.
But we still don't want spam.
Right.
We already own a timeshare. We don't need another one.
Right. Right.
Did you hear about the car warranty spam?
No.
Apparently, the FCC found them. And two guys were responsible for like 90% of all of those car warranty scam calls. Millions wow. and millions, hundreds of millions of calls was two guys.
Nice.
And they shut them down. So we should get fewer car warranty calls lately.
I still don't think they'll. I'm pretty sure the warranty.
That sounds like that Simpsons episode of puts a robo dialer.
Right, yeah. Right. I believe that I will not be needing warranty renewal on my 12-year-old Nissan Cube.
Well, if you could buy a third-party warranty on it.
I haven't, so there's no renewal needed.
If it's real.
Right. Yeah. All right, let's head to the phones. We've got a couple people patiently waiting on the line. Our first caller is Alan from Webster, New York. What's up, Alan?
Hi, how you guys doing? And thanks for having the show.
Thank you. What's up?
I think this might be easy for you. I went from a combined modem and router to a separate modem and router, and I changed the default password on the router, but I was wondering, do I have to change or should I change the default password on the modem? I have Spectrum internet cable.
If it's your modem, then definitely yes, change the default password, because that's the thing that's connected directly to the internet.
Right.
If it's their modem, you probably can't.
Right.
No, it's my modem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Change.
And the default password is password.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So change that immediately. It is unlikely. With many of them, you cannot change the username.
Yeah.
So you're just stuck with
it's
that.
It's admin. Right. It's
right.
Admin.
But you can change the password. You should do that, and you should make it complex and long.
Yes, I do.
Okay, right? Good.
And it's not protected by the router, but my internet, my home internet, is protected by the router password, correct?
Not. It is not. That prevents someone from logging into your router.
And making changes, like creating a username for them.
Right.
Okay.
But it doesn't, because right now you don't need to put in a password to get out or in to the internet, right? So stuff passes through it without any password.
But if they get into your internet router, they can then see your network router and can see its password.
Right.
And be able to get into your LAN that way.
Okay, and then I just look up the address for the modem and enter that in. I'm hardwired to my desktop through the router.
Right, right.
Okay, just look up the 191 whatever.
Right, 192.168. Probably 1.1, probably.
With Time Warner, it might be 100.1.
It might.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I couldn't find that answer anywhere on the internet.
Well, and now you know.
That's why you guys are great. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Some of the problem is the confusion on the word router and modem.
Right.
So modem is an old word.
Right.
For converting, modulate, converting sound waves from your analog telephone into electrical impulses that can go over phone lines. But that's the word we used when cable modems came out. But that's already digital. It doesn't use sound waves.
Right. There's no modulation or demodulation.
So it technically is a router.
Right.
That's the WAN router for the wide area network. And then you've got your wireless router, which is the LAN router for your local area network. So they're both routers.
Right.
But people still call it the modem because that's the word that's been around for 40 years.
And you know what? I'm fine with it. Let them be who they got to be. I don't care. As long as everybody understands which one we're talking about, we're good.
Yeah.
So, for everybody out there, if you have a modem from your internet provider, then that device, it is unlikely you will be able to change the username or password on. If you have your own, then you should, whether it's the external router or the internal router, you should immediately set your password to be A, not the default, and B, long, which is, you know, okay. These days we're saying 17 or more characters, but certainly 10 or more characters.
And it doesn't, you don't have to think of characters. You can think of it like words. Make it 5 words long.
Right. And complex, which is to say upper and lower case numbers, symbols.
Especially since the LastPass fiasco.
Right.
Everybody's LastPass vault has been lost to the bad guys.
Right.
As of, what was it, last August or November.
Yeah.
And so it's only as safe as your master password. So if you had a weak master password, you're screwed. The other thing we found, Steve Gibson just has been doing a detailed analysis of it, and we're very annoyed about what LastPass hasn't told us. There's something called the iteration count for how secure your password is. Well, 20 years ago when LastPass started, one was perfectly fine for an iteration count.
Right.
So if you've had LastPass a long time, your PBKDF2 is set to 1.
Right.
A few years later, they went to 500. A few years later, they went to 5,000. A few years later, they went to 100,000. Today, the recommended is 600,000 iterations.
Right.
If you have an old LastPass vault that's still at 1 or 500, you're screwed.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And so as good as your master password is, with that iteration count, it's much, much easier to break into your vault. And because the bad guys have your vault, it's not like they're trying to log into a website and getting locked out after 10 tries. They can try millions of tries a second to break into your vault.
Right, right, right.
And so, well, if you haven't, change your master password to LastPass now. Change every password stored in your vault, which is a huge deal.
Right.
And maybe look at a different password provider.
Yeah, exactly.
Because everyone has problems. Everyone has bugs. How they handle the bugs is what makes the company. And LastPass has acknowledged the breach, but they've sort of downplayed the danger, especially with the low iteration counts. They could have, you know, 15 years ago when the iteration count went to 500, changed everyone's vault.
They did not.
They did not. And then again when it went to 5,000, and again when it went to 100,000. So you may have a weakly encrypted vault. With very old encryption. If you, the people that have been the most loyal to LastPass for the longest time are the ones that are most vulnerable.
Right, right.
I'll post a link to Gibson's podcast on LastPass so he goes real deep in, because Steve Gibson from Security Now, they've been recommending LastPass for 20 years. He met with Joe Sechrist, the original author of LastPass, saw the code, vetted the code, and said, "Yeah, you're doing it right." And then LastPass got bought by 2 or 3 companies and have spun off and back and forth. And the new company isn't really handling it very well.
Right. All right. Back to the phone. Our next caller is Sue from Farmington, New York. What's up, Sue?
Hi. Yes. Thanks for the show. I have a problem with hacking. I think I'm getting hacked. I had an Netgear router through Spectrum before. And yep. I had all sorts of like different devices, WLAN access rejected and time synchronized with cloud server problems. And then when I did a Fing analysis on my Netgear router, I had a WPS access point. And let me see, it says connection, it says media, I don't know. But now I switched over to T-Mobile home router. And for a few days, I was doing a network analyzer scan. You know, I have an iPad, so I one of those apps. For the few days, it was showing router. Now it's showing the IP of the router, and then it's saying open WRT.LAN. And that's the first time I've seen it. And they told me to go back to the store and change your router, and I did that, and it's still showing the same thing. So I was wondering what you think of it.
Okay. What you need to understand is that most of what you've told us is normal.
But the bad guys use it to scare you. you know, they'll get you on the phone and they'll open a network scanner. Oh, look, all these crazy things are happening. No, that's your time synchronizer, making sure the clock is right. That's your software updater, making sure your software is up to date.
So the WPS access point, WPS stands for Wi-Fi Protected Setup. Some devices allow you to automatically set up a device by hitting the WPS button. First you set up the new device to say, listen for WPS. Then you go over to your router and hit the WPS button.
Yeah,
the two devices talk to each other, and then they connect. So that's...
This router doesn't have that option, though. It doesn't have any, like, buttons on it where it's... Next-tier one does.
Some device on your network does.
Some device on your network has it.
No, I don't have anything, any device. I just have an iPad that's connected and the router. That's it. There's no device.
Those are both devices.
I know, no. I mean, like, there's no other device is what I meant.
Okay. But it is possible that your router, most routers have a WPS option.
There is a vulnerability in WPS, is it only looks at four digits at a time. So when you push that button, you're vulnerable.
Right.
So the general recommendation is turn off WPS in your router.
Right.
There's no option on this T-Mobile home router to do it. There's no WPS option on the router. So I don't know.
You have to log into the router control panel in order to find it.
Oh, it's through their app, and all the app shows is your devices that are connected and your network information, and beyond that, it doesn't show anything. Like, I don't think you could log into your admin.
So that's not a good router to use, then.
Yeah, I wouldn't use, I would replace that router.
I thought I was having problems with my Netgear router, because I had ExpressVPN, and my DNS servers were connecting to, like, someplace in United Kingdom, and it wasn't my selection.
That's so what ExpressVPN does. It makes it look like you're in a different physical location.
Oh, I know. But, I mean, that's not, you select your location. I could see.
Not always.
Well, it'll randomly pick one if you don't pick one yourself.
No, I do pick one, but I pick a United States location, and I see on my, when I do a DNS, you know, who's my DNS, it comes up with United Kingdom.
Well, it may not be seeing your DNS, it may be seeing the VPN server's DNS.
And also, like, whenever I set up my, for the first time or whatever, or change my router password and write it, my passwords and my Wi-Fi name and password, the first line I get is WLAN access rejected, incorrect security, and they don't know either. They told me to send a debug.htm to them on my router, and we weren't able to do that, and I don't have an Ethernet connection to my router because I don't have a laptop, but it wouldn't let me send it.
Well, you can plug an Ethernet connection into your iPad if you want. But it sounds like that's a very no-frills, cheap router that isn't designed to be managed properly.
Right. But, I mean, my Netgear, I have a Rex 30, and that should be managed good. But, like I said, there's, like, a TV connection that comes up that's not mine, some connections that are not mine.
They're probably built into the router. A lot of routers will have... sharing systems built in, especially if the router has a USB port. You can plug a hard drive into it and have a shared network drive. You can have a music server built into the router. You can have a television media server built into the router, especially the high-end routers will do that.
How do you know if your router got flashed, they turned it into an open source, like this one, but T-Mobile router says, like, an open WRT.
You would log into the admin console and go to the administration page and see what router software and version it's running, and then compare that with the manufacturer, a website, as to what the latest software should be.
And
open WRT is a very popular router software that gives you all sorts of management controls. That's why a lot of people like it.
But I wasn't the one that put it on there.
It may have come with it. Some router companies are using it so they don't have to write their own. They use the open source one that's already been written.
A lot of Netgear routers, like the R7000 Nighthawk and a bunch of the high-end ones even, use Broadcom Wi-Fi chipsets, and they have open WRT supportability built into them. So you may see a link for open WRT even if you didn't install anything.
So how do I know if I'm getting, I mean, it seems like my account, the passwords are not, sometimes they don't match up when I change them and stuff like that. And then additional, like, equipment that is some device connections that I don't recognize, or like I had problems with my, how do I know, like, that I'm not being hacked? How would I know that?
Well, you don't. And the shorter answer is you're always being hacked. There are web scanners that are always scanning for everybody's router trying to break into it.
Right. Doesn't mean you got hacked. It means they're trying. So the way that you protect yourself is you run a bunch of, for example, you go to the Security Tango.
I'll post shields up. You do Security Tango.
Right. And you go to some place. I'm sorry, what?
Do you need a laptop connection?
No, not necessarily. Steve's put, you're putting a link for Shields Up.
For Shields Up, to check for open ports.
What you want to do is check our homepage, soundbites.org. Uh-huh. Steve's putting a link to a site called Shields Up. It is a very reputable, very well-known site, and what Shields Up will do is test your network to see if it is vulnerable.
If there's any open ports.
Right, and so that will tell you at least a bit about what is possible. Beyond...
When it comes to the open ports, there are certain ports that need to be open, but which are the ones that you need to have opened, and which ones... should you not have open?
None of the ports need to be open unless you are running a server in your house that you want people to access from outside.
So you can have all... So someone told me, well, you need to have this to communicate with your device with the router or something. You need to have this thing open.
When you are not home and you want to talk to your router, you need to have a port open. Open ports allow people from outside your house to get into your house.
Well, I don't use it outside of my house, you know.
Then you should have no open ports.
No open ports. Okay, that's good to know. All right, then. Thank you very much for your help.
Okay, thanks. Most places have a bunch that are open by default. 20 for FTP and 22 for Secure Shell and like that.
Which... if you're not doing that stuff, close them. Yeah.
Is that the music? All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Loden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 31 minutes after the hour. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, I am going to read this next news item because it is very important. Google is warning owners of some Samsung, Vivo, and Pixel phones that a series of exploits enable bad actors to compromise devices simply by knowing phone numbers, and the device owners wouldn't notice a thing. Project Zero, Google's in-house team of cybersecurity experts and analysts, described in a blog post 18 different potential exploits in some phones using Samsung's Exynos modems. These exploits are so severe that they should be treated as zero-day vulnerabilities, indicating they should be fixed immediately. With four of these exploits, an attacker has to have only the right phone number to get access to data flowing in and out of a device's modem, like phone calls and text messages. The other 14 exploits are less worrisome. Since they require more effort to expose their vulnerability, attackers might need access to the device locally or to a cell carrier system, they have to have a better in than just a phone number. Owners of affected devices should install upcoming security updates as soon as possible, though it's up to the phone makers to decide when a software patch will come out for each device. So, in the meantime, Google says device owners can avoid being targeted by these exploits by turning off Wi-Fi calling and voice over LTE or VoLTE in their device settings. you can still make calls over the cell network, just not over Wi-Fi. In the blog post, Google listed which phones use the Exynos modems, inadvertently admitting that its premium Pixel phones have been using Samsung's modems for years. The list also includes a handful of wearables and cars that use specific modems. Rather than try to read any list here and have people calling in because they missed it, we've created a page on the Soundbites website listing all the affected devices. It's linked on our homepage under latest links heard on the show, and it's called Samsung Modem Hack. It's currently the third one down the list, but that'll change as we go through the show. Google reported these exploit discoveries to affected phone manufacturers in late 2022 and early 2023, the blog post said. But the Project Zero team has chosen not to disclose four other vulnerabilities out of caution due to their ongoing severity, breaking with its usual practice of disclosing all exploits a set period of time after reporting them to affected companies. Google Project Zero says that until a fix is issued by Samsung, you can protect yourself by turning off Wi-Fi calling and voice over LTE. Yes, your calls may be not as clear or, you know, worse in some way, but it's probably worth it. Are you using one of these phones? Give us a call, but not over Wi-Fi. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Just like Rick did in Irondequoit, New York. Hi, Rick. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you? Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday to you. What's up?
I have been seeing some things on YouTube and stuff like that about Windows Tiny 11 or 10. Wonder if you guys have heard anything about it. They say it's something similar that you can run off a thumb drive and run it off a older computer, this, that, and the other thing, and, you know, be able to have Windows 11, we'll say, on an older machine.
Yeah. That does exist. It's a stripped down version of Windows. It is not official. So, you know, run it at your own risk. Don't call Microsoft if there's a problem. Don't call us. Don't call anybody if there's a problem. That's at your own risk. But it does run. I've seen it running on low end machines. It's basically a custom image of Windows 11, and it runs in 2 gig of RAM, and it's got a lot fewer capabilities and options built in. It's basically stripped out all that stuff.
What was that Windows stripped version that used to be used at like ATMs and stuff? It had a name.
Yeah, it did. And
it makes me think of what it is. Yeah, for a low power computer that only needs to do one thing.
Right.
Although
right.
It is disconcerting to see the Windows blue screen of death on your ATM.
Yeah, exactly. So yes,
that would be funny.
Yeah.
It does exist. You can install it on something. You can download it, but it is not a legal, legitimate version.
No, it's not updatable. Are you saying that also?
I am not. I don't know that because it just came out. We haven't played with it.
You probably have to wait for them to
right.
update it.
Right. It works a lot like the various Linuxes. The basic Linux, Linus Torvalds and his people put out fixes, Debian gets them, Ubuntu gets them, Red Hat gets them. They incorporate them, then they send them out. Now, those people do it within a day. No,
wow. I don't know. You only need 6 gigs of disk space and 200 megs of RAM.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. It's basically damn small Linux or puppy Linux, one of those. So, yeah, it will work if you absolutely feel the need to run a version of Windows on some ancient piece of hardware, this might be an option for you.
Fun to play with.
Right, that's what I was thinking. Something to play with and maybe use, as I've said in the past when I've called in there, you know, I do get into my work computers from home and things like that, and if that still allows me to do that, I have to do that in a Windows environment.
Right.
So if it allows me to still do that in the Windows environment, I can basically have the next step, I guess.
Right. Now, you should play with it because we do not know if that will actually work, right? I mean, because what software will run in that tiny little environment, we don't know yet.
Right.
But it certainly is something you could play with.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate the thoughts. Thank you. I just was thinking about trying it, and I thought I would check in with the people who know.
Yeah. Well, have fun with that. It does look like it would be a lot of fun to play with.
Okay. If something comes up, I'll let you know.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. Yeah, Windows Tiny 11, I believe, is the what they're calling it, whether that's some sort of official name. I don't have any idea. But that's what they're calling it. And and it is absolutely available online, and you can grab it anytime you like. Our next caller is Dawn from North. We're in North Carolina, Dawn.
I'm in Fairview Village, which is in the Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina Triangle.
Oh, very nice.
We know some people in that area.
Yeah,
the
you
people,
do.
The people we bought our house from moved down there. And
there you
that's
go.
When we bought their house.
We're down here for the winter back 1st of June to Pittsburgh. Anyway, my question may be a little bit out of your domain, but hopefully not too far. I'm interested in how to extend the Wi-Fi coverage within a two-story house. And I know that there's a device called Maze, whatever that is, but I'm wondering if the same thing can be accomplished with a second router that is simply put up on the second floor of a house, and that router being fed from one of the Ethernet ports on the first router, which in my case is in the basement.
It's not quite that easy. Because the two Wi-Fi signals will interfere with each other because you have two routers. Depending on what router you currently have, many router companies sell range extenders, which picks up the signal and then broadcasts farther. One of the problems with range extenders is that they cut the signal strength in half. Half the signal goes back to the main router as the back channel, and then half the signal extends your range. What you may have read about with new routers is called mesh, where you have one master router and a bunch of mesh routers that all talk to each other to dramatically increase range coverage.
And strength,
because it has a separate channel for the backhaul. But you would need to replace your router with a new mesh system. Technically all the same brands. So just like in routers, any net extender should work with any net router.
But theoretically.
It doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
The router has to be extendable. So in your current router settings, there would be allowed to be extended. It was called the WDS, Wireless Distribution System. If you do set up two routers, you could make them different networks on different channels. And that would cut down on the interference. But when the two radio signals merge or mix, then your coverages would be worse.
Well, right. Part of that is if you move from one router coverage to the other router coverage, you're changing your IP address, you're changing the network you're on. I mean, it gets a little nuts. So as Steve said, your best choice. Okay. So you can get a range extender, and it may work. It depends a whole lot on your house's configuration and where you currently have your router and everything that's in the way. Because as we've said many times, particularly when a router is in a basement, there are often a lot of pipes running across the ceiling, and those block the signal.
All the metal holding the house up.
Right, exactly. Whereas if that router were on the first floor, you might have no interference. But if you go with a mesh router, many companies have, Google among them, have something starts with an E. I don't remember.
Well, Eero is...
Eero.
We liked Eero until Amazon bought them. We still like them, but not quite as much.
Not quite as much.
But to be confusing, most companies will sell a mesh line and a non-mesh line.
Right.
So you have to make sure you get the right one.
With a mesh router, you get up to 3 satellites. So you have the main router and up to 3 satellites, which you can distribute around your house. And those satellites all talk to each other. So you could have one on the first floor, one on the second floor, another one farther off on the second floor. And as long as each one is in range of one of the others, you get a good signal all over the house.
They talk to each other wirelessly. You don't need to wire them with an Ethernet.
Some of them can be wired. It's more efficient to be wired.
Right, but they don't have to be.
They don't have to be because most people don't have wires, dangling around their house. If you did, you wouldn't need Wi-Fi.
Right, exactly.
How do you spell the word mesh in this case?
M-E-S-H, just like the a net.
Okay. Where are they available, and where would I look for a range extender if I want to try that first with my existing router?
I would start with your router manufacturer's website to see if they sell a range extender, and then any of the standard electronic stores or web shopping sites.
Yeah.
Does the range extender need to be of the same brand or the same ilk as the router?
Yes.
Yeah, to work the best, it should be the same brand.
Okay, and mesh routers are available online, I presume. Okay,
and in the electronic stores too. Yeah,
Eero makes them. Google makes them. Netgear has
Netgear Orbi that Dave has.
The Orbi,
but the Netgear Nighthawk is not mesh.
Right.
Yeah, and I think with mesh, I'm reading the Eero page here. There is no limit anymore, like there used to be.
No,
with WDBS, there was a three-hop limit.
Right.
With mesh, your router shouldn't be more than 50 feet apart, and you can use as many as you want. 50 feet's awful short. I wonder if that means they're recommending that so you buy more.
Yeah, maybe.
Because Wi-Fi range is usually 150 feet.
One thing that you can do is you can download a program for your phone that is a Wi-Fi signal strength checker. And you can then walk around your house and see where the signal dies.
Oh, that's interesting. To look for that app, what specifically is it called?
I have an Android phone. And for my phone, it's called, Wi-Fi Analyzer.
Okay.
There's a bunch of different ones. I use one on the Mac called iStumbler.
Right.
But they will give you a more detailed number, but you can just walk around with your phone or computer and see how many bars you get.
Right.
And
as
the bars drop down, then you know you're in a weak area.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a thing you should do. I recommend that anybody who is worried about the coverage in their house do that. We used to call it network mapping, where you just walk around the house and record where the signal is strong and where the signal is weak, and that will tell you how to change the coverage to get stronger signals.
Well, this is all in anticipation of sending the many boxes that we have back that I'm paying rent on to Spectrum, and going with Roku and with wireless for television reception upstairs and downstairs. And I think my first approach is going to be to take that modem and router out of the basement and move it up into the stairway as high as I can get it. So perhaps that will. What kind of coverage should one expect from one wireless router?
It entirely depends on the router. Each of them has a different signal strength.
And the construction of the walls in your house.
Right.
And how many doors it has to go through.
Right. So, for example, in my home, the main router is on the second floor, and it covers all of the house except the kitchen, where my wife spends most of her time, and the library, where my wife spends the rest of her time. So I have a my router has a mesh network, so I got a second thing and I placed it in exactly the right spot to get the kitchen, but I can't get the library because that wall is curved and there's chicken wire in the wall. It becomes a Faraday cage.
Yeah.
So I have to get a third device that would be able to see the downstairs or upstairs mesh thing and see through the door into the library, which I haven't done yet.
String an Ethernet into that room and put the router there.
Right. Or as Archandra says in the chat, there are extenders over power lines. That's problematic. If you have an older house, there's going to be a lot of interference there.
Let me ask you another wild idea. How about using two modems? The modem in the basement with a router and one upstairs on the second floor that I would wire in.
If you want to pay for two services, that's another way to do it.
Right. The problem, again, is that you now have multiple networks in your home and moving among them, or between them in this case, there's only two, moving between them can cause problems.
Okay, I'm just thinking about three TVs on the second floor and putting a modem and a router up there on the second floor and leaving the other one in the basement.
You're much better off doing a mesh thing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Because then you would double your internet bill to have two services.
Right, one right, for each right. Modem. It's much less expensive and much less problematic to do a mesh network rather than two modems and two everything's.
Gentlemen, I apologize for saying this might be out of your domain. My goodness, it's totally in your domain in terms of your excellent information as usual, and thank you very much.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. Have fun down there in North Carolina. I'm not going to ask you what the weather. I don't want to know.
How about 70 and sunny?
I hate you. Let's just get that right out in the open right now. I hate you. Hang up on him. Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye, gentlemen. Bye.
We have a customer that has a couple of barns about 2,000 feet away, through the woods, around corners, down a dirt road, and he wants internet in his barns.
Sure.
We tried to talk him into getting a second internet service.
Yeah.
Because that would have been cheaper than trying to run wires, 1,000 feet down to the barn, and now multiple wireless routers in each barn to cover each barn. But it's all right.
Get a Pringle can.
Yeah, we looked at that. There's too many trees. We would have to get a 30-foot antenna on the barn so he could see the house. Didn't want to do that.
Okay.
so he had a guy come in to run a trench, and we laid a fiber wire down, and now we're waiting for the weather to clear again so we can finish the job and put the ends on the wires.
There you go. All right. Good luck with him. All right. We got a couple minutes left. Back to the phones. We have Larry from Fairport, New York. What's up, Larry?
So I'm an old guy, and I'm so old I used to get caught in do loops all the time. So I'm kind of in a do loop on this question. So, anyway, I've scanned a whole bunch of old photos. I've taken them to one of our local professional photo shops, and they used a high-definition scan.
Right.
And what it was is the photos are in an album, and there's like six of them on a page. And what I want to do is I want to cut them through software. I want to cut them and put them into like a PowerPoint presentation so each one's on its own slide. So my initial thought was I'm going to go ahead and use the snipping tool and cut out the pictures and then paste them into the PowerPoint slide. I guess the only concern that I have is am I going to lose a lot of detail when I do that? Or is there a better way that I should be doing that to get just the, to get the cut up picture of from my PDF file that I got from my.
It is unlikely that you're going to lose resolution in the cutting. When you paste it into PowerPoint, Microsoft will reduce the size of the picture in some cases. So you may lose resolution at that end, but it won't be a lot, and it's unlikely to be particularly noticeable. Stay on the line, Larry. We got to take a break.
And there are better ways to do that.
We'll talk about them when we come back. But that's it for the first hour. So we're going to take a slightly longer break this time. But we'll be back in just a few minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, Larry from Fairport, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we continue with your generous support to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Take that bio break. I know I'm going to. Get a snack. I know I'm going to. And then we'll be back with a whole nother hour, assuming we don't slide out of our chairs and end up on the floor. So we'll see you in just a few minutes.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we still have Larry from Fairport on the line. And Steve has a couple of questions.
Well, yeah, we had a question. You said PDF. Did they give you one PDF with all the pictures in it?
No, they're separate PDFs for each scan.
PDFs or JPEGs?
You're right. They're JPEGs.
Okay, yeah.
That's better.
That's more common with pictures. If you just want to do a slideshow, there's a bunch of ways to do a slideshow right in Windows and the Mac without needing to do any third-party software or building anything or pasting anything. In the desktop window of your pictures, there's a Start Slideshow button, and it will do full-screen slideshows of all the pictures in that window.
Okay. The situation is that there are, like, six snapshots glued into one page, and then that's one scan.
So that you would need to cut apart.
Right. So we're right back to there's a lot of software that'll do that.
Windows Photo Editor
will do it. The GIMP will do it. A bunch of programs will do that and make each one individual. That in itself should not cut down on the resolution of the picture.
When you do the save as and save a JPEG, you have a choice, a little slider bar on quality, where you can have high quality or low file size. And so you'd probably want to keep high quality.
Right.
However, when you paste it into PowerPoint, it is likely to lose some quality.
Okay.
Not a significant amount. It won't turn, like, blocky or anything.
Right.
But you will lose a little bit of the resolution just because that's the way PowerPoint will compress the file a little bit.
Okay. So what my plan is as I'm going to document each one of these pictures, and then I'm going to change the file name on the JPEG files so that you can find the picture. So if you see it in the PowerPoint presentation, it's picture number 20. You can look through the JPEG files and say, this is JPEG 19 through 22.
Right.
There are cataloging programs that will do that, that may be more what you want it to do.
Okay. All right. Very good.
I just looked in PowerPoint. There are in Excel and Word, there's a in preferences, you can choose what quality image you want to put in now.
Okay. Excellent.
Oh, that's nice.
Because I remember PowerPoint used to just compress the heck out of them.
Yeah.
And then your 100 slide deck would still be huge.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. The other problem you're going to run into. I hope you've got a lot of disk space, and whoever you're going to give this presentation to also better have a lot of disk space.
That's the benefit of leaving them, individual files. You'd still need about the same disk space, but you wouldn't need, it wouldn't be one giant, 5 gigabyte file.
Right.
Right. Okay. Okay. I see what you're saying there. Yeah. Okay. I guess I kind of, I'm trying to, I like the idea of the PowerPoint because I can add notations and things to the captioning and that kind of stuff, which is really important. So anyway, okay. All right, so very good. So it sounds like there's a lot of different options out there that I can work with. Does the snipping tool have a tendency to cut down on the quality, or is that still a legitimate thing for me to use?
That's still legitimate. It generally speaking does not change the resolution of the file. I guess it would depend on the snipping tool you use, but none of the ones I've used have that problem.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Have fun.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Yeah. I do find it a little odd that whoever did his files did them 6 up. That's just weird.
I'm wondering if that's how they originally were. He didn't have the original slide. He just had a printout of a 6 up.
Bart.
Or maybe that's cheaper. It's a dollar a scan. So if I put 6 pictures on one scan, that's a dollar, not $6.
That could be. I got that.
I used to use a program called Delicious Library that was good for books and movies and pictures. And it would tie in with your phone and use a barcode scanner, so you could scan the barcode on commercial stuff. And it had a lending library built in. I still can't remember who I lent my copy of X to, but you can sign it out like a library, and then it can send them emails.
Real library back in the day, I had a little notebook and a pen in a drawer in the library. Anybody could borrow a book and just write down, who I am. I've got a friend who now lives in Colorado. She still has 2 of my books. And I remind her of this quite regularly.
Send her an overdue book notice with a fine on it.
I said, why don't you send them back? She said, it's the only time you call me is to yell at me for still having your book. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Bart from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bart. What's up?
Hi, Nick. This is Art, ART calling.
Hi, what's up?
I called last week and we had a nice discussion about Linux distributions, and you suggested I take a look at Gentoo. And I just wanted to thank you for suggesting that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to use it, but it definitely was an interesting distribution to get installed.
Yes, it was. It is not for the faint of heart. I think I mentioned that last week. It is you build it from the ground up, so it's down in the trenches, absolutely.
Yes, I had to do things I hadn't done in 20 or 30 years to get that thing installed. Be that as it may, that box is my DVR, and so I'm getting ready to update it because the Ubuntu I have on it is coming to an end of life, so I'm trying to figure out what to do. I didn't realize at the time that my timing was apropos because I'm also looking to upgrade the DVR software to be able to support broadcast 4K television, which is marketed as next gen or ATSC 3.0. I realized after the call that our local channel 31 will be going to next gen 4K broadcasting this coming week. So if anyone listening is still using over the air broadcasts in Rochester, you will have to rescan your TV Thursday after 10 a.m.
Right.
That's just a heads up for anyone who's still using the antennas out there.
Good point. Thank you.
And last week also, Steve, you were not in the studio. A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned that you were saturating your Office Network downloading iOS and macOS updates.
Mm-hmm.
I know a way where you can automate that via command line, so you can do it off hours via cron job. So I'm curious if you'd like to, I can send you some URLs. If you like them, I can possibly send them to you through the chat.
I have that. Using the software update command from the terminal. It's just there's a new version so often that I got to download the new one now.
Right. When you're working with somebody, you can't say I'll wait till tomorrow to do this.
Yeah.
Well, and
quite often Apple's tools to run the diagnostic tools, you have to have the latest OS on that device.
Right.
Well, my point is you can do it command line and automate it, so you don't have to do it during the day.
It's a good idea. Send him an email, steve@soundbites.org.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Okay. Thanks.
Okay, I can do that. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Art.
I also use ipsw.me, right? Yeah. IPSW is the name of the software, the internal file name. And so you can get all the different OSs for the different Apple devices, and the latest signed OS as well. But it's like every time we go to run a test, oh, you need to load the up. Oh, you're right. You know, 13.2.1 came out yesterday. Damn it. I'm going to download that.
Right. Well, he's right. If you do a download every night, I suppose, you'll always have the latest. But
out of the 400 products that Apple makes.
Out of the 400, that's the problem. You know, if you'd have to have a server specifically set up to download all of those every night. I get that. It's not the possibility of doing it. It's the actually having the hardware and time to set it up. I get that. I do. There's a new version of Ubuntu coming out. Lunar Lobster will be available in next month, 23.04 it'll be. And
by the light of the moon?
By the light of the silvery moon. There's a new version twice a year for Ubuntu, every March and every November. No, October. And so... they're done by year and month. So this next one will be 23.04 for 2023 and April. So did I say March? April and October. I believe this one will be LTS, long-term support. So it'll be supported for 5 years. I only upgrade to the LTS versions. And in fact, I'm behind at the moment, just because over the years, upgrading has not been there. Back in the day, you know, 25, 30 years ago, updating any version of Linux was not a good experience. And so to this day, I'm still a little gun shy about updating something, but I have to do it, and I know I have to do it. And I do it on all my other machines. But my desktop, my production desktop, is still a little back. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from somewhere in central Pennsylvania. What's up, Ed?
Hey, I plan to buy a Dell Optiplex tower to replace an old Vostro tower. And I noticed that the current Optiplex models for sale don't have a line out jack on the back like they used to. Now, a couple of weeks ago, you were talking with a guy about a dongle or an adapter to use a microphone with a computer. My question for you is, are you familiar with any adapter or dongle I could buy to connect a pair of wired speakers to a USB port on the rear panel of a new Optiplex tower?
Yeah, there's hundreds of USB to audio jacks, both in and out.
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty much, you know, head to your favorite online retailer and just look it up. Steve's holding his up right now.
I don't use anymore because I found a direct quarter inch to USB input.
Right, and what model is that?
This is from Behringer.
From?
Yeah, Behringer. That's a very, very popular German-made electronic.
There you go.
Audio adapter.
So yeah, they're out there, and there's just a lot of them. And
yeah, the biggest choice is how many ins and outs you want.
Right.
Uh huh. Okay. Yeah, the speakers that I'm talking about use a standard 3.5-millimeter audio plug. In fact, is there a pair of Altec Lansing speakers I got with my first computer, a Gateway 2000?
Interesting.
Nice.
That's odd. So the Optiplex doesn't add that. I know. So Apple made the news a couple years ago by removing the headphone jack from their iPhone. But all the computers still have one, and we laugh at Phil Schiller every time a new computer comes out, and it still has a headphone jack.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, what I'm about to say might make me sound a little more knowledgeable about this topic than I am. I read that the line outs jack on these older desktops are what is called a line level output. With the USB port on the back of the Optiplex, which I would connect an adapter, be a line level output also?
Most of them have both line level and mic level. And the difference is whether your speakers are powered or not. If they're powered, it can be mic level. If they're not powered, it has to be line level.
Uh-huh. But these speakers are powered. You have it plugged into a wall.
Yeah, so you should be okay.
Okay, all righty. Okay, all right. Well, that's all I had to ask about that. By the way, thanks for your time. I sent a check last week to renew my membership. So as they say, the check is in the mail. So thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that's right, folks. If you like what you hear here today, and you are helped by what you hear here today, please think about becoming a member of Jazz 90.1. You can do that by heading over to jazz901.org, find the big Donate Now button, and, well, donate. Become a member. It's easy, it's fast, it's convenient, and it keeps us on the air. And we're going to go back to the phones, and now we're going to talk to Nate from Rochester, New York. Hi, Nate, what's up?
Hi. I'm on a public Wi-Fi where I live.
Yep.
I have NordVPN. How can I protect myself when I got to log in on my phone to use my KeyBank app or any app?
Well, the apps are all encrypted by themselves within the app, so you don't have to worry about that. It's when you go on web pages that you want to make sure you type HTTPS to get to a web page. Most web pages will be encrypted automatically these days. And most browsers will show a little padlock icon in the URL to indicate that it's encrypted on your computer before it heads out over the public internet.
Okay, so here's my question. Raspberry, I think they're called Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
In Webster, they had they had free Wi-Fi. It got hacked, and we found out it was a Raspberry Pi. How do I know if it's actually... Okay, let me back up. Moving to apartment complex with free public Wi-Fi, and that's what I'm concerned about. I'm just having a Raspberry Pi sitting out in their room.
Anybody connected to the same Wi-Fi that you are can theoretically see all of your traffic. That's why you want to make sure that you only go to encrypted web pages.
So generally speaking, everybody will see your traffic, but if you go to only sites that are HTTPS that are encrypted, the traffic they see will be encrypted and they won't be able to break it. So if you go somewhere and you don't see the lock, then you know that someone could see that traffic. If you do see the lock, then they can see that you went there, but that's all they can see.
Okay, so then all the passwords and stuff are safe as long as it's HTTPS, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
As long as it is secured. Nowadays, most browsers give you a warning if it's not secure.
And it will prevent you from going there.
And it will, you'll have to click an extra button to go there if it's not secure.
So let me ask you this about NordVPN then. What's the purpose of that? Because I was told, based on research, that will protect me and I won't need that LifeLock or all those other things.
NordVPN allows you to look like you're somewhere else on the internet. So you can say I'm in England and steal BBC iPlayer video.
Right.
Or you can say I'm in Tokyo and steal Japanese anime.
It does encrypt, if you set it up correctly, it does encrypt all of your traffic. So people wouldn't even be able to see any of it. Oh, they'd see it again. They'd see it, but it's encrypted, so they'd see gibberish.
And then it's decrypted at Nord's end, and so they can see everything you do.
Right. But if what you're worried about is that you're on public Wi-Fi, having NordVPN will protect you. It will not protect you from the folks at NordVPN, but theoretically, yes, they're a very reputable company, and theoretically, they aren't getting broken into these days, so theoretically, you're safe.
Okay, and let me do one more follow-up, and that's if their Wi-Fi can do it. Apple TV, do you think I should run an Apple TV on there? Public Wi-Fi, or, like, because I would use it for YouTube TV or Netflix, but I know those get hacked easily as well.
Well, they don't get hacked at all. It's the service you connect to.
Okay, yeah.
Anyone else can see your data unless it's encrypted.
Right.
And virtually every website and every app encrypts your data on your device before it sends it out over the internet.
Right. So let's say, for example, you want to sign into Netflix. You see your username and password in clear text.
Right.
But it gets encrypted before it gets sent out to Netflix.
Gotcha.
So anybody who's snooping your network will not see the plain text password. They'll see the encrypted password. And then I suppose if they spend enough time and money and effort on it, they could break that encryption.
And so that's where spyware and malware come in. That's how they utilize that?
Well, the way they work is that they get on your machine and they grab your password before it's encrypted.
Yeah, they trick you into installing a fake program by saying you need this driver to view this video, for example.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay. Hey, guys, thank you very much. I thought I was more computer savvy than I was.
There you go. Thanks, Nate.
I appreciate it. You have no idea how much I appreciate it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The one problem I've had on my Apple TV when I go to a hotel, for example, so I'm going to take my TV with me on Apple TV on vacation, is anyone else in the hotel's Wi-Fi can see that Apple TV, and I get these requests all the time. Can I screen share? Just because you see an Apple TV on the network doesn't mean it's the one in your own room.
Right.
So I have to turn off my screen sharing service while I'm not at home because
Apple used to have that problem where you saw every printer on the network.
Windows had that too for a while.
Windows had that too. And people would all print to the very first printer on the network.
Alphabetically.
So I always said to people, you've got to name your printer like ZZZZZ top. You know, you can't, no. And we had a guy who put a beautiful multi-$1,000 laser color printer on his network, and he wanted to name it A because then it would be convenient for him to print to it.
Mm-hmm.
I told him no. I told him why no, and he did it anyway. The next day he came in, and an entire ream of paper at $2 a page had printed porn.
Yep.
Now, I get it. You want to print this porn picture. You go to print it, and where did it go? It's not on your printer. Why did you print the second one and the third one and the 500th one?
Maybe it was 500 copies of the same picture because the first one didn't print, so I'm going to print it again.
No, they were
different picture.
I didn't look at all of them.
Because that's at the other end. People print to the first printer they see in the list, not the one next to them.
Right. So I always, and my printer at work was named Wastebasket. A, it's down in the W's.
Yeah.
And B, who's stupid enough to print to the wastebasket? So.
Black and white piece of crap.
Black and white piece of crap is what it was, too.
Instead of a fancy, expensive color printer.
Right. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, the great Michael Oden, who's doing an amazing job staying awake. The show. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back with a whole lot more of your phone calls and a lot more nonsense. So take a little break, but don't forget to come back. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, I'll read about the Windows 11 cumulative updates. The real Windows 11, not the tiny Windows 11. Microsoft has released the Windows 11 cumulative updates for versions 22H2 and 21H2 to fix security vulnerabilities and bugs in the operating system. With the release of the Windows 11 22H2 update, Microsoft has publicly released the Moment 2 update to all users under preview since last month. This update brings many new features, including tabbed notepad, phone link for iOS, a searchable task manager, the tablet-optimized taskbar, screen recordings in the snippet tool, voice assist, and much more. That is in the Windows 11 22H2 update. Don't call us and say it's not in the 21H2 update, because you're right, it's not. These are mandatory Windows 11 cumulative updates containing the March 2023 Patch Tuesday security updates that fix 83 vulnerabilities in various Microsoft products. Microsoft is aware of two ongoing issues for Windows 11 22H2 that have not been resolved in this update. So patch it, but you're still not going to be safe. A longstanding issue is that provisioning packages are not working as expected, and Windows Server Update Services servers may not offer Windows 11 22H2 updates released as of February 14th, 2023 or later. So if you're in a business and using Windows Server Update Services, or WSUS, you may not be getting those updates. Finally, Microsoft also says this update fixes an issue preventing a reused computer account from joining an Active Directory domain. In many businesses, when someone leaves, there are generic accounts that are designed, you know, for example, the accounting account, right? Some other department account. And when someone leaves, they just reuse it at a later point. Or if, you know, Jay Jones leaves and a new Jay Jones comes in, that name gets reused. And that used to be a real problem for Active Directory, and now it's less of one. So anyway, how's your system running these days? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
So no matter how much you update, there's always another update coming.
Oh, man, ain't that the truth. Ain't that the truth. And that happens on Linux all the time because each individual program updates on its own schedule. So I get an update every day, every other day. But they run in the background, and they don't require me to restart my machine unless I'm updating the operating system.
And quite often the person that finds the bug
fixes
patches
the bug.
It and releases the patch.
That's exactly right. That's why they update so often. I got to read this news item. Remember Second Life?
Yep.
The virtual world launched on the desktop web back in 2003. Jeez, and crackers were old. With 3D avatars and spaces for various social activities. Many of us had quite an active life there and made lots of friends. Soundbites made it a gathering place before Mastermind Lounge. Believe it or not, Second Life has been running continuously this entire time, and now it's coming to mobile for the first time ever.
We were crying for a mobile version 10 years ago.
Lordy, lordy. In fact, this will be the first time that Second Life has expanded beyond the PC, well, across Windows, Mac, and Linux, in any form. In a post in the Virtual Worlds Community Web Forum, a community manager for Second Life developer Linden Lab shared a video with some details about the mobile version's development, announced that a beta version of the mobile app will launch sometime this year. Normally, we don't talk about beta apps or rumors or any of that stuff on this show, but who doesn't love Second Life and want it on a mobile app? The video reveals that the app was built using Unity, in part to make it an easy path for releasing and maintaining the app on multiple platforms, including the iPhone, iPad, Android phones, and Android tablets. It also includes a few minutes of footage of Second Life's detailed character models and environments, with accompanying commentary by Linden Lab developers about bringing as much of the experience to mobile as possible. A recent article in Game Developer about the announcement argues that the launch of a mobile version could breathe, well, a Second Life into Second Life. There's reason to be skeptical that it's going to greatly expand the audience for the virtual world, though there are much more modern tries at the concept that has more recently come to be called the metaverse. Even those are struggling, though, and it's unclear exactly what Second Life, which appears saddled with plenty of technical debt among other challenges, would offer that the newer upstarts don't. Linden Lab was working on a VR successor to Second Life called Sansar, S-A-N-S-A-R, for years, but it ultimately stopped work on the project and sold it off. Sansar has hopped owners a couple of times, and its future remains uncertain. There's also an open-source version of the server software called Open Simulator that also hasn't gained massive traction. That's actually pretty cool because you can run it on your own servers and join the Open Simulator community and move from world to world to world across that. It's actually pretty cool. And, of course, there are no restrictions of any sort if it's running on your own server. Even though the app probably won't fundamentally change Second Life's place in the market, it ought to be a welcome development for the virtual world's surprisingly vibrant community of diehards. Second Life is still flush with both users and profit. The ambitions have been scaled down. It's no longer aiming to become a second internet. And the character of the community has shifted considerably, but it's by no means the ghost town outsiders might expect. It's niche, though, and a mobile app might not be enough to change that. Still using Second Life? Give us a call, IRL, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415.
I just tried logging into my Second Life account that I haven't done in I don't know how long. I got to notice that my password has appeared in a data leak.
Oh, congratulations.
And then I get a bad gateway error.
Nice. Very nice.
So I can't change my password because it won't let me log in.
Huh.
Crazy.
Yeah. That's weird. I do have to. There are a couple of people. I don't know. I'm getting a person saying that they've got. No, it's not 2018. It's 2023-03 for March, -18 for the date.
There we are. Now I can. Does it tell me when I last logged in?
It should.
There was an age field where it would tell you how long you've been there.
Yeah.
Account history, is that it?
Yeah, I don't know. I have to log on to Second Life myself. I haven't done that in years. We still have some people who use it quite regularly. There's some truly amazing stuff that's still there and going nicely, but. I keep telling myself I have to get off Second Life, and every time, you know, it costs money every year. I'm a paying member, and I keep saying I got to stop paying.
Yeah, didn't you own land?
I own land.
That was a big thing. Well, still is, where you can make virtual goods and sell virtual goods in Second Life, and I keep all these news stories about Meta and the Metaverse, and we've been doing that for 20 years in Second Life.
Yeah, exactly. It's not news.
Looking at their graphics, they're a lot better than they used to be, too.
Right. Well, and that's the big thing. You know, when we all started with Second Life, it was okay, but it got better, and it got significantly better, and it's still good. The problem with it really is that they never got a browser version running, and so you have to use some sort of app, and the app only exists on, as we said, on desktop operating systems.
Mac and Windows. I didn't even see a Linux version.
There is a Linux version.
There was?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see it. It doesn't say it in the download at the moment.
Oh, well, maybe it isn't there anymore. But, it usually just gives you the one you want, and you can go.
Well, yeah, and it said not using a Mac. You need the Windows version.
Oh, interesting. No, there have been quite a number of Linux versions. I used to use it all the time. I've only been on Linux for the last 30 years, so.
It may not be an official Linden Labs version.
It may not. Yeah. It may not. But it certainly worked for me. And the other set of problems was the Vox software that they used in the background to do voice. And I mean, there were just a lot of kludges that. Back in the beginning, did not work tremendously well. Something that worked in the browser. Like, for example, now on when we do the lounge every Sunday night, which we will do this week, when we do the lounge every Sunday night, it runs through the browser. You don't need anything but a browser, so you can run it on pretty much anything with a semi-modern browzer. We had somebody who couldn't run it on some old ancient device. Oh, a web TV. Well, yeah, that
makes sense.
20 years
old. I think they shut down the network on those things not too long ago.
Yeah, they did. So that's clearly not going to work. But on any semi-modern browser, you should be able to do it all, and that's video and audio. So they should be able to make a version on a web browser that lets you do voice. But that's not how they're doing it. We have a question on the chat. Can Steve talk about the Mac feature private relay? Is it an effective alternative to VPN?
Okay. So private relay is a feature that they added to iCloud Plus a couple of system versions ago. Let me see when I can see when they added it. So there were two features they added for web and mail. And one is private relay, and the other is hide my address. So if you pay for iCloud, which a lot of people do because they need more than the 5 gigs of space, what private relay does is all of your web traffic goes to an Apple server. So it uses Apple's DNS. And so if someone tries to find you by your IP address, they're going to go to Apple and not you. When you connect to the internet, you get a temporary IP address. I haven't seen how often that temporary address changes, because that's always the big thing. Right. Even with a VPN, if you log into your VPN and get the same IP address every time, they can still trace it back to you.
Right. But this doesn't encrypt the data, the traffic.
No, it protects unencrypted traffic by hiding your IP address from the other end, so they get Apple's IP address, not yours.
But it is not an alternative to VPN then, because
not
there's
really.
No, the traffic is not encrypted.
Protects your unencrypted traffic so that no one, including Apple, can see who you are or what site you're visiting. There is a geolocation change, so you can also change your country and time zone, so the other end doesn't see what country you're in.
Right.
So it sort of gives you the primary uses of a VPN is steal content from other countries.
Well, one use of a VPN,
right? True. Yeah, the non business use for logging into my office back at home.
Right.
And then the other service they added was hide my email, so that when you log into a new service, you don't have to give them your real email address.
Right.
Apple will make a fake email address tied to your account, so that other end has this fake address, but mail still gets to you at your real address.
Right. You can also do that if you don't want to go through Apple, or you're not an Apple user or whatever. You can use duck.com. At duck.com, you can get an email address, and you connect it to a real email address of your own. And everything you receive comes to, you at duck.com. Everything you send comes from you at duck.com, but it's from DuckDuckGo, and so consequently, one of the things it does is it strips out trackers, and it anonymizes everything, and it strips out everything that would in some way be able to trace you, which is the privacy of the DuckDuckGo system. That's what it's designed to do. So you can get an address at duck.com. And
quack.
And what?
Quack.
Quack at duck.com. Why not? You could. All right, back to the back to the phones. Our next caller is Jeff from Spencerport, New York. What's up, Jeff?
Yeah, so I got a question about ink cartridges compatibility with
Brother printers.
Uh-huh.
I've got one of these, the ones that have the big tanks on them. They're kind of expensive. And big price difference between genuine Brother and these compatibles. I wonder if anybody's had any experience using those.
I have been using, well, I have an I have a laser printer, but I have been using non-Brother cartridges in it for 5 years.
There's a risk that if the cartridge or the ink tank is too cheap, it could damage the printer. So you don't want to go to the cheapest one. Go to like a middle of the road one. But what is often the case is the printer manufacturer will void your warranty for not using manufacturer's ink.
Right.
Oh, that's a big deal.
Well, if your printer is still under warranty, it can be.
Yeah. And
I'll have to check that.
One of the things that's been happening in the printer world is people have realized how expensive inkjet printers are to run. That used to be that half a milliliter bottle of ink, you know, was $20. You know, half a milliliter. So this is 2,000 half a milliliters.
Right.
And it works out to like $4,000 or $5,000 a gallon.
Right.
I used to be Epson, but that was so expensive. I went to Brother.
Many printers now have larger tank versions. Epson's is EcoPrint or EcoTank, and they've got Shaquille O'Neal doing their commercials. Right. So this giant guy. But a lot of printers have now started using these larger ink tanks.
Mega tank.
The cost per print is lower because there's more ink in the tank. The danger is that if you don't print enough, your liquid ink will dry out and ruin your heads, and then you've ruined the whole printer. What we often suggest is that if you don't need to print in color, get a laser printer.
Right.
$100 for a decent black and white laser printer. They're not that much more expensive than inkjet printers anymore.
Right.
And if you do need color, you can get a decent color laser printer for $200 to $300. And the cost per print is significantly lower than liquid ink.
And also, a laser print will not run if it gets wet.
Right. The one advantage that liquid ink still does have is if you're printing photographs on photographic paper, the liquid ink can mix better. So if you're printing a lot of photographs, you may want to get a liquid printer. What I just got for my wife is a Dysub printer from Kodak.
I don't know
if it's really Kodak anymore.
Right.
But I got a 4x6 Dysub printer for $99. And the print pack, what was it, $20 for 100 pages? So you have to use the Dysub paper. But it gives all the snapshots that she wants to print and create her photo albums again. Because I bought her an Epson PictureMate, which was their inkjet photo printer, and she let the ink dry out.
Right.
So I got her another one, and she let the ink dry out. So now she pulls out this giant pack of 4x6 inkjet paper. So, well, can I use this in the Kodak printer? No, because that's not an inkjet printer.
Right. But, yes, yeah. you know, if you're looking, it really depends on your use case. Except for, as Steve said, photos and not.
And if you go to a higher end color laser printer, photos are great.
You're in
the $1,000 range there.
Right. But if your use is mostly documents rather than photos, or even pictures rather than photos, if you understand the distinction, an inkjet printer is much more expensive and not as easy, I guess, as a color laser printer.
Yeah. Well, as soon as this one dies after a few ink cartridge exchanges, I'll probably go to black and white laser printer.
Right. Yep.
But I didn't do that this time because I was familiar with, you know, the regular, you know, four color, you know, you know, printing. And, you know, I occasionally print some. But this Brother one, it goes into an automatic clean cycle every week, I think it goes through.
And oftentimes every time you turn it on, too. So a lot of people will leave their printer on all the time. Because every time you turn it on, it cleans the heads and uses a little bit of ink.
Yep.
So you can end up going
on the other hand, it keeps the heads nice and fresh.
But you can go through all your ink without ever printing anything.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I've done that on the Epson ones. Oh.
Yep.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate the help.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Remember the solid ink printers?
Yes.
Remember we called them the crayon jets?
Crayon jets.
That was it was better quality color than a liquid ink and what not as expensive as laser.
Right.
Back, in fact, that's where I first met Jackie, my current boss. I joked that she used to work for me because I was the customer. She was the sales agent. We went to the computer store she worked at to look at the new $50,000 color laser printer. It was only $50,000.
Is that all?
Yeah. And
back in the day,
that was super cheap.
Yep.
And you put it in your graphics department with 10 or 12 people using it.
Yep.
So it's only you know, $5,000 per user. And then you didn't have to go off to a commercial press to do your proofs.
Right. But one thing you have to remember is that as you move along, prints become more expensive. So the cheapest printing is a black and white laser. The next cheapest is color laser. The next cheapest, and it's not cheap at all, is inkjet. As the three common types, right? So, it used to be, you know, nowadays a color laser print is what, a dime if it's that. They used to be $1 or $2 a page. And we had a guy who printed at a place I worked. We had a guy who printed everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he printed it to the color laser printer. He was printing black and white because it was all text.
Yep.
But he wanted a blue border around it. And we eventually cured him of that.
Just wait, by sending him the bill?
Sending him the bill. That's exactly yep. what we did. We charged his department. His department head went to him and said, "What the heck
mm-hmm.
is this?"
A lot of times we'll see color inkjet printers will advertise, you know, it's only $1 per page.
Right.
Well, it's $1 per color per page.
Right.
So if you're doing a photo, that's 4 colors.
Right.
And that's based on 10% coverage.
Right.
Which is double spaced text.
Right.
If you're printing a color photo, you probably have 400% coverage.
Right.
And that might be a $10 worth of ink.
Although I will say my favorite ad ever was for the original Epson inkjet printer. And it was a woman in a bathing suit running. And the caption read, "At 300 DPI, you see a woman running. At 600 DPI, you see that her bathing suit is wet. At 1200 DPI, you see that her bathing suit is painted on." And it was, you know, to say that, you know, you'd, or I think it was higher than that, 1200, 2400, whatever. But the point was, it was designed specifically to say,
yep.
you don't have good enough resolution for your printer. But I thought that was kind of brilliant. All right. That music tells us that we are, in fact, done for another week. I'm kind of shocked. Yes, Dave Enright is off somewhere in the Southwest, probably looking for Steve. Thinks he's still out there, but maybe we'll have him back next week. Who knows? Every week somebody changes. People come and go so quickly here. But that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank Michael Oden. He came in and as always, did an amazing job for us. Thank you. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks to everybody who called in. Good questions this week, as always. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours.